Open your Bibles with me, if you would, to 1 Samuel. I find myself in the same dilemma. I always find myself trying to determine how to give you an overview of a book that is so rich and so full. And in the case of 1 Samuel, when you run it parallel with 2 Samuel, you'll find there are many different dynamics going on all at once. And with the Lord's help, we're really honestly trying to step back and get just a good overview. But you'll remember that Samuel was the last acting judge. He had tried to appoint his two sons, but that didn't go over well with the people because of their ungodliness. And Samuel was never another judge raised up like the other judges prior to Samuel, and then Samuel being the last. Samuel was also the first prophet, the first real official prophet. Remember, we read that verse that talked about there had been no vision. There had been, in other words, God had not spoken directly to a man and talked with him about what he would have the children of Israel to be doing. And when Samuel was on the scene, Samuel was spoken to by God and told, go this way and go that way and tell the children of Israel this and that, along in the same order that Moses had been spoken to and Joshua after him. But Samuel will start a line of prophets. Now, it's a little confusing about whether Samuel was a priest. It would seem to me like he was not an official priest, though he was acting like an assistant to the priest. And the reason I don't believe he was a priest, because he's not from the right tribe to be a priest. But he was there in the tabernacle, helping, working, doing whatever he could do. And so Samuel is this transition period. And remember then the people clamored for a king. They wanted to be like all the other nations. Remember, God told Samuel, listen, don't sweat this. They haven't rejected you, they've rejected me. I'm their king, and they don't want me to be their king. And so they looked out over the children of Israel, and Saul had risen up as, from the human vantage point, the perfect king. The problem is, seemingly, in Saul's heart. Again, a lot of discussion by theologians as to whether or not Saul was ever really saved. Personally, I'm doubtful at that. It talks about the Spirit of the Lord coming upon him. It talks about the Spirit of the Lord departing from him. But I believe that the Bible is speaking of how that God directed him and used him. But as far as Saul being a regenerate man, I really have my questions about that. But that's between him and the Lord, of course. But the people saw Saul as the right candidate. And he started out, it seemed like, really good, on firm footing, humble man. Somewhere along the line, he served about 40 years, somewhere along the line, Saul got arrogant. Saul, because of, I don't know, because he wasn't really made of the right material, he began to do some very erratic things. And then to take care of those erratic things, he tried to cover them up, and he just compounded his mess. And it began to be obvious that old Saul just wasn't the right man for the job. Or at least it began to be obvious to Samuel. Samuel talked to him more than once and rebuked him. And then God, in 1 Samuel, let's see, 1 Samuel chapter 16, Well, we'll actually back up. First Samuel. I am trying to find in my notes, and I believe it's in 1 Samuel 15, where God rejected Saul. And through the course of the Bible study tonight, we will, Lord willing, find this in 1 Samuel 16. We'll move on. 1 Samuel 16. We'll start with that and see where God had told Samuel that he was going to replace Saul. Well, this passage says both things. This is what I was actually looking for. 1 Samuel 16. The Lord said unto Samuel, "How long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill thine horn with oil and go. I will send thee to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons." And Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hear it, he will kill me." And the Lord said, "Take an heifer with thee, and say, I am come to sacrifice to the Lord. And call Jesse to sacrifice, and I will show thee what thou shalt do. And thou shalt anoint unto me him who I name unto thee." So back in the Bible survey study we had last week, we saw where God had removed Saul from the throne. 1 Samuel 15:28. I want you to notice this passage. 1 Samuel 15:28. We looked at this one last week. "And Samuel said unto him, The Lord hath rent the kingdom of Israel from thee this day, and hath given it to a neighbor of thine that is better than thou." Samuel had to look Saul in the eye and say that the Lord hath rent the kingdom of Israel from thee this day. What I get out of that is not only has Saul been rejected of God, but Saul's complete lineage has been rejected of God. And Samuel is told then by God in chapter 16, I'm going to give it to one of his neighbors. I'm going to call him myself, and you'll appoint him. And the contrast is, Saul seemed to be chosen by the people. And only they can only look at the outside of the heart. David was chosen by God. Now, to look at David on the outside, we'll read scriptures tonight where that's nothing wrong. He was seemingly a handsome, strong young man. Perfectly understandable to be a candidate. Now, he had some older brothers that seemingly Samuel looked at right off and said, "Oh no, that one right there." And we'll read where the Lord tells Samuel, "No, wait a minute. No, you're looking at the outside. I'm looking at the inside." Where we see Saul have a fall, largely due to pride, we'll see David rise to the spot of God's called man for that time. I believe largely due to his humility. And all along the way, God is preparing and preparing and preparing. That's what I want you to see out of this tonight, how that God is preparing. 1 Samuel 16, verses 6 and 7. Remember, he'd gone over to Jesse's, and the brothers, the sons of Jesse, were paraded through. Verse 6, "And it came to pass when they were come that he looked on Eliab and said, Surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance, nor on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth. For a man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. And what struck me about that passage is even old, wise, godly Samuel had that propensity to size up one of Jesse's sons and say, on the basis of the outward appearance, that's the one. And God said, no, wait a minute. No, you're only looking at how tall he is, how strong he is, how handsome he may be, whatever qualifications humanly he may bring to the table. Samuel, you're not looking at the heart. And they parade all of Jesse's sons through there. And they don't find the right one. Well, is there any more? Oh, just David out in the field. Probably at this time a mid to late teenager. Just David out in the field, bringing. Verses 8 through 13. Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel, and he said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. And Jesse made Shema to pass by, and he said, neither has the Lord chosen this. And again Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel, and Samuel said unto Jesse, the Lord hath not chosen these. And Samuel said unto Jesse, are here all thy children? And he said, there's remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. And Samuel said unto Jesse, send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come hither. And he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy, and withal of a beautiful countenance, goodly to look to. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brethren, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. So the scene here is that Samuel started off looking on the outward appearance. He didn't make that mistake for long, because God said, now you just wait a minute, and you wait till I tell you which one it is. Now this description of David, it says here that he was ruddy. The root word of that is red. It seems to mean a man of good color, or may have to do with the fact that he'd been outside a lot and had that good color. It wasn't a bad thing, it seems to me. He was of a beautiful countenance, goodly to look to. These things aren't in and of themselves a disqualifier. But Samuel could not look solely on these things and get the judgment of God. He had to know what the Lord said concerning the man's heart. And when David came through, God said, that's the one I want. The one that they had, the rest of them had kind of just discarded. But that's the one that's going to be king over Israel. Now, that's going to take a little while. There's a lot of preparation that's got to happen. But he will one day be reigning over Israel. Now, 1 Samuel 16 and verse 14. But the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him. Now, Saul was all worked up inside. Saul rejected of God, but still acting as king. 1 Samuel 17 comes along. The Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered to gathered together at Succoth, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Succoth and Ezkai in Ephesdamim. And Saul and the men of Israel, I want you to notice that, and Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elath and set the battle in array against the Philistines. Saul, acting as and seen as the king. He has been rejected of God, but he's still fulfilling the role. And he's going to for some period of time. A few years, it would seem. There is a time of preparation. David has to be prepared. The people have to be prepared to receive David. And these things will unfold. Interestingly, the way that God works this thing out, at the end of 1 Samuel 16, we have David coming at the request of Saul to play music for him, to play on his harp. Saul was all troubled and turmoiled, and he said, I need something to calm me down and soothe me. And he sought for someone very skilled in music, and someone there said, well, there's this fella in Jesse's house that's named David, and I hear he can play the harp like nobody's business. And Saul said, get him for me. Very interesting that David is playing the harp for Saul, the man that he's going to replace. And I believe at this time David knows it. Now Saul doesn't. I cannot believe that Saul would know it at this time. Saul knows he's rejected, but doesn't know that David's his replacement, would be my understanding of the situation. Later they became very close, and David even became Saul's armor bearer. Now think of David and the restraint. You know, I'm going to replace this joker. But he had so much respect for the Lord's anointed that he wouldn't, we'll read a verse, even want to scratch him. And he warned anybody else, don't you even scratch the Lord's anointed man. He had respect for that office, even if Saul didn't have a respectable life. Later, Saul would actually try to kill him, David. He would try to twice throw a javelin at him and try to get him with a javelin and chase him around the mountainside. And twice, two other times, David had opportunity to literally kill Saul. He twice had opportunity. And remember the one, he cut a little bit of the hem off of his garment. And just to prove, I could have taken your life, but I didn't. Another time took his sword, and I could have taken your life, but I didn't. And even at those times, the Bible says that David's heart smote him. Why did his heart smote him? He felt as though he had disrespected God's anointed man. He was so humble before God that he felt as though he disrespected God's anointed man, and that bothered him. All of this is in preparation for David as he needs to be prepared to sit on the throne. He has to have his character tried and sharpened. He has to have experiences that he can draw from as he sits on a throne. Now then, there needs to be some other preparation going on. He has to be raised in the esteem of the people. They've been following Saul for quite a while. And Saul at one time was a mighty man of valor on the battlefield. But then you come to 1 Samuel 17, and we meet Goliath. A 9 or 10 foot giant that had held the children of Israel, the armies of the Israelites at bay. He'd walk out, there's a passage in 1 Samuel 17 where for 40 days in a row he'd walk out. And the phrase the Bible uses, present himself. And my understanding of what he's doing is taunting them. Come on, chicken! Anybody out there take me on? And nobody did. And at one point, David is sent to the battle to take food. Jesse sends David just to take your brother some food. His three older brothers were with Saul, and they're all hunkered down, hiding from Goliath. And David comes along and says, look, is there not a cause? What's going on here? Isn't there a good cause? Isn't there somebody going to rise up and fight? And David said, I'll fight him. And Saul said, you can't fight that guy. And David said, look, I have fought lions. I have, with my bare hands, protected my flock. And I realized that it's God that had given me the power to do this kind of thing. And the same God that can give me the power over the predators and the out in the field can give me power over this guy. I don't care if he is 9 or 10 feet tall. So let's read verses 1 Samuel 17, verses 10 and 11. And the Philistines said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we might fight together. And when Saul and all Israel heard the words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. That's where Saul and everybody else was at this time, just cowering in fear. Chapter 17 here, verses 13 through 19. And let's look at verse 16. The Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. It would seem like that's when he was out there just taunting them, probably heckling them. Verses 20 through 28, David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with the keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him, and he came to the trench as the host was going forth to fight, and he shouted for and shouted for battle. And Israel and the Philistine had put the battle in array, army against army. David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion of the Philistines of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, that when they saw the man, fled from him, and they were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that is come up? Surely to divide Israel is he come up. It shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spoke to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth the Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered after him this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left these few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. And David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? And so David is even scorned by his brother. You're just down here to see what's going on. Well, he'd been sent there, but most importantly, God was in it, and God was preparing him. Well, of course, you know the story then after that. David was told that he couldn't do it. Verse 32, David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with the Philistine. And Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came in a lion and a bear, and took
a lamb out of the flock. When I went out after him, and I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he rose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. And the servant slew both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. And we know the story after that. A sling and five smooth stones, and he pops the giant right in the forehead, knocks him down, takes his own sword, takes Goliath's own sword, cuts off his head, smokes the giant. David would go into battle with Saul again and again, and the estimation of David began to rise in the eyes of the people. That's all part of the preparation for David being upon the throne. David's experiences are preparing him, but as he has these great victories on the battlefield, it's preparing the people also for the transition from Saul to David. And all of this makes Saul to hate David. There's a scene where they're coming back into town, and they're crying out, and they're dancing in jubilee, saying, Saul has killed his thousands, and David has killed his 10,000s. To a prideful man like Saul, that was a knife in his heart, this little shepherd boy. And they're singing his praises bigger than mine. And that's when Saul set in his mind to get rid of David. Remember, it would seem to me David knows one day he's going to replace Saul. And Saul does not yet know that. And the people do not yet, by and large, know that. Samuel does. David does. But the time of preparation is ongoing. Samuel's probably in his early 20s when... David is probably in his early 20s when he kills Goliath. Well, you know the story how Jonathan and David became very close. Jonathan is Saul's son. And Saul's trying to kill David, and Jonathan goes to Dad and says, Dad, you know, what's David ever done to you? Calm down. And he gets him to calm down for a little while, but it's not long. And in 1 Samuel 19, verses 8 through 10, he's ready to kill him again. 1 Samuel 19, verses 8 through 10. And there was war again, and David went out and fought with the Philistines and slew them with a great slaughter. And they fled from him, and the evil spirit from the Lord was upon Saul as he sat in his house with his javelin in his hand. And David played with his hand, played on the harp. And Saul sought to smite David, even to the wall with the javelin. But he slipped away out of Saul's presence, and he smote the javelin into the wall. And David fled and escaped that night. Here at one point they'd been very close. David had been his armor bearer. David had been the source of much comfort through the playing of his harp. But because he had success on the battlefield, and his estimation was rising above that of the estimation of Saul in the eyes of the people, Saul hated him, had to remove him. We'll kill him. Well, of course, God's hand was upon David, and he wasn't going to get killed by Saul. Twice, David spares his life. If you're taking notes, 1 Samuel 24, 4 through 8. Okay, 1 Samuel 24, 4 through 8. 1 Samuel 26, 7 through 23. David spares Saul's life. Ironically enough, Saul takes his own life in 1 Samuel 31, 4. He's losing a battle. He's afraid of being captured. He asks his armor bearer to thrust him through with a sword, and the armor bearer wouldn't do it. So he falls upon his own sword. And then his armor bearer does the same. And that you can find that in 1 Samuel 31. It's verse 4 where he falls upon his own sword. All of this time is a time of transition and preparation, leading up to God's man for that time. Now, what I want you to get out of this, what I want you to take away from this, A, we have to be very, very careful about making judgments on just the outside human eye vantage point. Young ladies and young men alike, as they began to get into their teen years and up into their upper teen years and beyond, and they look out and they say, that one there, that would be the right one for me. You don't know that unless God's in that. You see? If you only look at the outside, you're missing most of the vantage point. You need the leadership of the Lord, for He can look on the inside. And I always say this, and I always remind people of this. If beauty and glitz and glamour and fame could make a good marriage, if all the good looks in the world could make a good marriage, then what's wrong with a Hollywood crowd that's been married 5 and 10 times apiece, you know? But a God-selected spouse, that will last. A God-selected union. And that has to go beyond just the outward appearance. There's an element of that. David was a handsome man. But Samuel said to... the Lord said to Samuel, look on... you're only looking on the outside. I'm looking on his heart. And Samuel had to change his vantage point. And if that old saint of God could err in that, and he did, the eldest son of Jesse came out. That's the one right there. He's the one. If that old saint of God could err in that, think how easy it is for any of us to err in that. And there's so many other applications to this truth. One of the most important would be that husband and wife relationship. Yes, but there are so many other illustrations where if God's person, the person for that time, like the judges were raised up, that judge for that time, for that specific thing. I believe that's the way it is with pastors and churches. Clarksville, Brother Garner Smith's church, I think it's Faith Baptist Church, they're going to be looking for a new shepherd. Brother Garner Smith's been there a long time. It's going to be an interesting thing to have him succeeded by someone. And we need to pray that that church will have the wisdom to look beyond maybe a popular and polished preacher, but which one does God want, right? Just like when Moses died, both Joshua and Caleb were qualified to lead the children of Israel. But Caleb wasn't called. Joshua was called. Joshua had been prepared by God. Remember how long Moses had prepared. Moses had lived under Egyptian rule and got Egyptian teaching for 40 years. He got 40 more years of teaching in the wilderness, 80 years of teaching before he ever started leading the children of Israel out. God's man for God's time. Peter, at one point, just had a terrible propensity to run off at the mouth and make promises he couldn't keep and speak first and think later. And then later, God marvelously transforms him into this powerful tool. God's man for God's time. Because he was prepared. And David's being prepared. And the people are being prepared to receive him. And that process is vital. You cannot get around that process. And that process goes far beyond just external preparations. God's preparing the heart. And God's looking on the heart. I pray that that's a lesson that sticks with us as we make decisions in life, and as we put confidence in certain individuals for whatever reason and look to the Lord for leadership as far as spouses and things like that. God looks on the heart, and you get His leadership, and you'll have something that lasts. Next couple of weeks, we'll begin to look at a lot of other dynamics are going on right now. There's strife in the kingdom, and it's going to be divided up 10 tribes and 2 there for a while. Even Saul's son's going to reign for a little while. He's not supposed to, but he's going to for a couple of years. A lot of other dynamics going on. But that's what I was hoping to get out of this lesson. Let's be dismissed and ask the Lord to be with us and go into our prayer groups.